You're listening to TCRG to CEO Radio with your host, Courtney J., TCRG.
Hello, hello, and welcome back to TCRG to CEO Radio. I'm your host, Courtney J., TCRG, owner and director of School Rank Alumni in Connecticut, and welcome, welcome back to the show. Today we have part two of our episode and interview with Diana Dersch. So if you haven't already listened to part one, go head back to episode number 12, where you can find out the first part of this interview. We had to split it up into two because there was so much to talk about, so much content that you guys, I'm sure, will absolutely love. And if you want to go ahead and follow me on Instagram, that's where I post a lot about what's coming up on the podcast and all sorts of other business and teaching, and of course, Irish dance related content. I'm at CourtneyJ_TCRG. And while you're at it, you might as well go and follow Diana. She's at Mrs.Dersch on Instagram. And you can join us both in the Facebook community. You can find that at facebook.com/groups/TCRG to CEO. You guys can go ahead and answer the questions that come up when you request to join the group. Fill them out, and I will approve you so that you can join in on the fun. In celebration of 1,000 listens, you guys will get the opportunity to score a giveaway. And to do that, you'll have to go be on my email list. So go ahead and type in www.CourtneyJTCRG.com/podcast to get on the email list. There's a little subscribe box in there, and only email subscribers will get to enter this giveaway. So I want to make sure that you all have the chance to go ahead and do that before I announce what it's going to be. Without further ado, let's get into part two of our interview with the awesome Diana. So the other thing people really wanted to know about was you've chosen to come back to competing instead of going right for your TCRG or retiring or things like that. So people are curious how come and what other goals you might be chasing right now.
Sure. So I have chosen not to go for my TCRG right away for a couple of reasons. First, obviously, I'm still competing and I don't want to put myself out of competition, at least that option, for a while until I know for sure I'm done. I've had 3-ish breaks in my career now and every single time I've come back. So I don't really want to put myself in the position of not being able to do that. So that's the first one. And mostly, though, it's because of my husband's job. We are only up in Pennsylvania because of his job right now, and we're only going to be here for a few years. So I don't want to get my TC until I know, or at least have a better idea of where we're going to be settling and if we're actually going to be there more long term. I know that there are plenty of options to teach under schools and, you know, move on in a couple of years or something like that, but that's not my style. I'm much more of a loyal person, and I would want to, if I decided to teach under someone else, I would want to be there kind of for the long haul and be able to invest in the dancers and in my teaching career, just with the knowledge that I'm going to be there for a long time. So once we figure out where we're going to go and where we're going to hopefully end up for the foreseeable future, at least, I'll probably start working towards my TC and eventually take the exam. So I don't know what I want to do with it. I'm kind of the kind of person that says I want to just do it just to say I did it. And that's kind of my approach to the TC as well. Like, I just want to have it, but that doesn't necessarily mean that I have this vision in mind of what I want to do with it. I would love to do workshops. I would love to do choreography. It'd be kind of fun to be an adjudicator eventually, I guess. I think it'd be fun to have my own school and to be able to run it because I do love all the business stuff. So I am totally a nerd for you, Courtney J. your podcasts and posts are great. But honestly, I don't really know what I want to do because I prioritize my family so heavily. As much as I love dancing, as much as I love competing, my family is number one for me, and it has been since I got married. I would be totally willing to give up dance for my husband, for our kids, for the good of our family, which is why I've tried to not hold so tightly onto some of the goals that I've had that have gone unachieved. And so I really want to be able to prioritize my family. And in a lot of ways, I don't feel like being a TCRG is conducive to that. Especially not running your own school and teaching in the evenings and going to competitions on the weekends when that's like when your spouse is typically going to be home and when your kids are going to be home. So we'll see down the road what happens. I think technology is going to be making it a lot easier for me to be useful with, you know, doing choreography or something like that for schools, or maybe just kind of supplementing another teacher or in their school. That could be cool too. So we'll see what happens with that. But I kind of have just put that off for a number of years.
Yeah, no, I totally get that. I mean, you want to be settled and you want to be able to really be clear on how your TCRG will serve you. So
yeah. And if I get it and never use it, that's totally fine by me too.
Yeah, no, I think it's smart to get it, have it, and then you have the option to use it or not use it.
Right. Yeah.
So you kind of...
So personal goals?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
So yeah, you had touched on, you know, you had a little bit of unfinished business that you're trying not to hold so tightly to, but what are some of the things that you are kind of working on, or if you had to just put it all away today, you know, how would you feel about it?
Yeah, I pretty much ever since I knew what Aractus was, I have wanted to win one. And by Aractus, I mean regionals. And it's been a long journey. I feel like, if I'm remembering correctly, it's been 18 Aractuses that I've done. And I've still not won. And I've been close many times. There was one year in particular that I recall that was a huge upset for me and for my teacher at the time. And so that's just the one goal that I have not achieved. I achieved my goals for myself at nationals and at worlds. Another goal I had was to compete at any other overseas major, which I have done. And this is just the last little thing left on my list. And it's not little by any means, because it's so elusive for me specifically and for a lot of other dancers, I'm sure, as well. So I really thought that I would be able to get it by now. But honestly, that's the one goal that I'm still working towards now. And the thing is, I know all too well how much time and energy and planning and money goes into training and preparing to have any kind of competitive success, but specifically to win the Aractus. And I don't have a lot of those things right now. I don't have a lot of money. I don't have a lot of time. I have some energy, but not as much as I'd like to. And I also don't have what I would want to have as my body if I was like aiming to win. So that being said, I know that it's a realistic goal to have, but it's also somewhat unrealistic. Too disappointed if it doesn't happen, because I just don't necessarily have to do it. And I know that I'm a good enough dancer now, and certainly that I was before. Like, I know that I have it in me to do it, but it's not about me. You know, a lot of this stuff, the competitive success, editors look and what adjudicators you get and how they're feeling that day and what the floor is like on your speed that are completely out of your control. And I can't say, oh, well, okay, I'm in 100% peak performance to go win, and then if I don't win, like, I'm going to be mad, because A, I know I'm not going to be 100%, and I might be 100% for me, but I'm not going to be necessarily where I would want to be. And I know that there's just so many other factors. So I really want it, and if I had to stop now, or if I didn't achieve it this next fall, I would certainly be really sad, especially if I had gotten to the point of knowing I would be retiring. But I also just know, like, it's not necessarily meant to be, you know, it's just, it's not in the books for me, and that's okay. I've given it my all, and I've done a lot of different things, and I've tried different approaches, and life has happened, you know? And so I want it, and I want it badly enough to keep working for it, but I'll be okay if it just never comes.
Yeah. I mean, and I just echo so much of what you said, is just the stars that you need to have align even when you're at 100% and you are that caliber of a dancer. You know, sometimes you can have five or six people that could all realistically win, and it just depends on all those things that you can't control. Right. And there's no point worrying about them. All you can do is how you prepare. And that was my biggest mental hurdle, was always let go of all the things you can't control instead of focus all your energy on what you can. Mm-hmm. And that's ultimately what happened to me at my last Worlds. I desperately wanted to world medal, as in break into that actual world medal holder block. Mm-hmm. I was super close. It didn't end up happening for me. I was too late. I was already booked in for my exam, and I had to be at peace with it, because it was well, what more could you have done? You still ended up doing great. The world goes on. Life goes on. Yeah. I don't hold any ill feelings about it. Would it have been nice? Yeah. But there's nothing else I could do.
I think it's extra hard for me too, because all the years, at least in the past 5-ish years, all the energy that I've put into dancing, I've reaped so many other good results, benefits of competition, but also just like my actual placements at competitions. And I've achieved these goals that in my mind are even higher than winning Aractus, and like in terms of how difficult they are to achieve. And so it feels like this is just like, I missed a step almost. Like, I want to get first at Aractus, top five at Nationals, and medal at Worlds, and I've done the other two. And it just feels like this thing that I just can't get. And it feels so unfair sometimes, because I've accomplished these bigger and better things, or at least they are in my mind, and I still haven't even been able to get this one thing. And it feels really silly sometimes to think that, but it's kind of true. You know, like for most people, the progression is Aractus, Nationals, Worlds in terms of their achievements. And so while I'm obviously extremely happy with how I've placed elsewhere, and just my general overall competitive success, like it's kind of tough to sit here and think, okay, this is the one thing that I haven't gotten yet. And it's so annoying that it's still there.
Yeah. Yep. I hear you. And I mean, among those other achievements, I mean, not specifically competitively, but you have finished all 12 grade exams. You are a grade exams graduate. Woo-hoo. And a lot of people are just curious what your experience is like, especially since it's becoming more common to have people complete all 12, but it's still a fairly rare thing to have completed all 12 at this point.
For sure. So let's see. Thinking back, it's actually kind of hard for me to remember, so I wrote it all out, so I hope you don't mind.
Yeah, no
I'm
problem.
Just going to kind of read through. So you were specifically talking with me about like those later grades, the grades 9 through 12, which are when you start doing the contemporary sets and more Kaylees.
Yep.
To be honest, I didn't find them very challenging at all. The Kaylee part was a little bit challenging, and that was mostly just because I didn't really do a whole lot of Kaylees. I finished the grade exams back in 2017, so that was before we actually moved and I had my next school. So my other two schools, we just really didn't do a whole lot of Kaylees. I did a couple A hands at Aractus. We did a forehand at Aractus, I think 2 years when I was in Florida, but that was about it. So the thing that was challenging for me was just that practical dancing knowledge of them. You can't go into the grade exams and just have book knowledge. People did that. Like, I was being tested with other dancers who had literally just read Arinka Kaylee, and it was like, no, you can't get by with that. Now, there might be a day where you can because the examiner that you have just so happens to ask you questions that you only really need the book answer yep. for. But for the most part, you really need to be prepared to dance them. Some of the examiners made the Kaylee parts easier than other ones, but they all definitely said, like, make sure you have practical dancing experience and not just the book knowledge. And I will say too, in your podcast, and when you talked about the TCRG exam and the grade exams a little bit, you mentioned that they're not going to have you dance them.
Yeah, this is good to hear because I finished before the grade exams came in and yep. they say that you only need
yep.
the book only need knowledge, exactly. but clearly that is not the case.
It's not. No, I actually on multiple occasions was asked to dance things. One of them I remember specifically was when I think it was like grade 4 or something, or maybe 5, where you have to do Humorous Abandon. And there were enough of us, I think there were 8 of us in the group taking that same grade. And the examiner just said, okay, well, there's 8 of you. You should just dance it. Because that showed her then that we had all the knowledge we needed about the dance. Like, we didn't know what spot we were going to be in prior to that. Like, we didn't have any kind of practice time or preparatory time to remember it or go over it. Like, we just had to get up there and dance it.
Which to me is how Kaylee should be. I mean, and I know
right.
some schools will have you learn one spot so that you can go into any team. But my philosophy is if you know the Kaylee, you'll be able to jump into any spot right. because that shows that yep. you really know the dance.
Yeah. And I understand like when you're prepping for a major or something like that, you want your dancers to know their exact part to the T with all of the exact hand movements and whatever. But yeah, I mean, in terms of practical Kaylee knowledge, you should just be able to get up and dance it. However, you yep. know, whatever you have. So we were asked to dance Humorous Abandon. And then a couple of other times, don't ask me which ones, but a couple of other times we were asked to dance just certain portions or at least walk through the movement. And they would say like, okay, I want you to be the top gent. What do you like? Show me, walk through this portion of the Kaylee with arm movements and counts and stuff like that. And so you're just kind of talking yourself through so that the examiner knows that you're actually familiar with the material. So I definitely think you need to be prepared to not only dance them, but just have the practical dancing experience of doing the Kaylees, because it'll also help you understand what you're reading better as well.
Yeah, I learn better by doing anyway. So that was something right. I was lucky we did Kaylees growing up, but I think it makes a lot more sense when yes. you do it.
Yeah. And like my teacher is really accommodating. Like I have a video of helping some of the dancers through the 16 hand reel when I was prepping for that. And it was really fun. Like she was very helpful in making sure that I had the practice, like the practical practice of teaching it and dancing it and explaining the movements because it definitely was valuable when I was actually being examined. So highly recommend that. Let's see what else. Otherwise, it was not that difficult. You touched upon in your previous podcast that it can be hard to pull out so many contemporary sets. For me, it wasn't. And I totally
see, you love choreography though.
I do. And I have 18 or so years of set dances to pull out.
Yeah. You know? So I think it's for the people that don't, or maybe they are just at championship level and maybe they haven't done a lot of set dances, that could be right. overwhelming and a big stumbling block, just as if you hadn't ever really done Kaylees, how the Kaylees would be a stumbling block.
Right.
So
yeah. And to deal with that, I mean, the exams are designed to be taken at significant times apart. Like you're not supposed to go in and blast through them all. And sure, like if you're a really successful dancer and you've been dancing for a while and you just want to get it done and get your TCRG and be done, then yeah, I mean, you can blast through them and they still make you wait, but at least you can get through them relatively quickly. But they're not designed to be done that way. They're designed to be done over a course of, I want to say,
lifetime.
12 years. Right. Like you're supposed to do them when you've reached different points in your dancing. And so to me, from that standpoint, if you're following that, not to say that there is an exact way, a right or wrong way to do them, but if you are kind of following that, you're going to be doing the later grades once you actually have a bigger repertoire. So advice that I would have for someone who either struggles with this or just doesn't have a whole lot of experience with contemporary sets, I'd highly recommend making up your own or working with your teacher or somebody else you know to make up your own for the times when you get to pick. So those earlier grades, like starting in grade 9, like you get to pick which tunes you're doing and pick shorter ones, you know, like pick Storyteller or Miss Brown's Fancy or something where you can recycle some choreography or just completely make it up. And that way, when you get to the point where you have to list 5 and then they just like pick 2 for you, who knows how much in advance, then you have 5 sets very clearly in your brain that are muscle memory, that are going to be much easier for you to adapt to. And so that would really be my advice. And I did that myself, like even though I actually did some sets from like the early 2000s that I had learned, I did make up several. And I did Is the Big Man Within, which was super fun.
Yeah.
It's crazy short, let me tell you. But it was fun to just make that up and do it for one of the exams. The examiners are just looking that you can do appropriate choreography. So if you're recycling, like if you're doing a treble jig in that grade and you do a hornpipe set, like just recycle some of the hornpipe material you have or just have some fun. Like have some practice and some experience choreographing on your own or choreographing a friend.
Yeah, I think, I mean, especially if you're taking them along the way, or even if you're taking them blasting through in the hopes of getting your TC quickly, it's a great way to work through some of that choreographic vomit that you mentioned mm-hmm. earlier that right. I think is everyone's first experience at choreographing. You want to throw everything in. You might not have a filter for it yet, and it's just a good testing ground for it. And I think people... with the grade exams, I don't know, I guess maybe somehow it feels more intimate than a FESH because it's right. just a different environment and people are worried about, you know, just, I guess, being judged differently mm-hmm. that I think it's just a good way to get it all out there. See,
yeah,
give it a test. They're really just looking to make sure that your rhythm and timing is on, mm-hmm. that it's an appropriate level.
Yep. Yep. So. And I mean, appropriate level can mean world qualifier and
or like high prize winner,
right? Or high prize winner, exactly. Like they're not looking, like I did some really really simple sets and by simple, like they're simple compared to what I do at competition now, but they're not simple when you think about, like, it's not a prize winner set, you know. Yep. Like it's a preliminary champion set, it's something that maybe I did at my first Aractus or something. As long as it's at the appropriate level, which really just means high prize winner early prelim, like
yep.
You don't have to complicate it and make it into just this some like, oh, well, it needs to be like worthy of me qualifying for worlds. Like there's not any kind of standard like that they're needing.
Yeah. Yep. And at least all the dancers that I have that have done great exams have had a very positive experience. They felt the examiners were very supportive and gave them really nice constructive feedback. And
yep. I thought they were really good. I had some really cool examiners. One thing I do want to note, just as some personal experience here, is that they are more formal than they seem. Like I felt like going into them, like the first time I expected them to be like really uptight and like super, I don't know, like just high stress, high anxiety. And they weren't, but I made the mistake of not walking off the stage like you would at a FESH and just walking forward and jumping off the edge of the stage, which I got called out for by the examiner. I made it a little bit too casual. So just make sure you still are being really respectful of the examiner's time and kind of following those basic FESHNA rules when you're presenting yourself. So just a little note.
Noted.
So I have 2 other little things about the grade exams. Let's see. Yeah. Other advice or just my thoughts. Make sure you plan ahead if you're planning to do them. Fortunately now, like you and I have both said before, like they're much more accessible now. You know, you can find those upper grades much more easily than I could even 2 years ago. But plan ahead. And like, if you even think you're going to eventually get your TC and you're still competing, just do them. And even though they're a little bit pricey to do, I really did not think that they were that bad. Like, when you think of how much it costs to go to a competition that you have to actually travel to, like pay for a plane flight maybe, or a significant amount of gas or a hotel room or whatever, plus the competition entry fees, like a competition for me as an open dancer is $75 typically. And that doesn't even include travel. And a grade exam, if you're just doing one at a time or even two at a time, is not even going to be that much. So even though it is certainly an added expense, and it adds up over time too, you know, when you tally them all up, it's like several hundred dollars. Like, it's really not that much in the grand scheme of things. Because if you eventually decide to get your TC, you know, even in your mid to late 20s, you kind of haven't competed in a while and you're like, oh, I should get back to dance. I think I'd like to run my own school or whatever. How much money are you going to have to spend?
Right, chasing all of them individually or chasing them in groups.
Right. Yeah, like you're never going to be at a point, unless you're willing to wait years to do them all, you're never going to be at the point where you don't have to travel for them. Like, that's, yep, you're going to have to travel for one. And I did. Like, I did all of them locally except for my last grade, grade 12, where I had to go to Boston. So, you know, just plan ahead and think about it. And again, even if it is seeming like it's an added expense, because it is an added expense, like when you think about it in the long run, it's not. And so I would just encourage people to keep that in mind. Even if it means, you know, going out to dinner one last time that month with your friends or something, you know, like there are easy ways to make sure you have the money now so you don't have to spend, you know, three or fourfold that later in doing them.
Yeah, great tip. And let's see, we're almost to the end of all the listeners' questions. So I think the last big one is just, what do you see your dance career looking like after you finish competing? And you kind of touched on it a little bit before when we were talking about the exams and why you returned to competing, but.
Yeah. And just to kind of summarize that, like, I don't really know, and I don't feel like I need to know. I think I'm thinking back to the podcast you had with Annabelle a couple weeks ago, like there isn't just one path. Like, you don't have to follow the expected path. There are so many different things you can do as a dancer without a TCRG. There are a lot of things you can do with a TCRG. And there's no one path that you have to follow. You don't have to go straight from competing to teaching or any of those things. And so as much as over the years I might have wanted to join a dance troupe, or wanted to have my own school, or thinking into the future, like how much fun I think it would be to be a traveling workshop teacher and just kind of do choreography and be like that supplemental teacher for some different schools. You don't have to go those routes. And as CLRG changes, as some new younger blood comes in, I think that there's going to be a lot of different opportunities that we may not even know about yet. Like, we may not even be able to fathom how Irish dance is going to look in 10 or 15 years. And so I'm trying to just be patient and willing to see what comes up and what kind of opportunities are presented at the time that I can take them. So if I have maybe 5 or so years before I take the exam, I don't know if I'll be able to compete all those 5 years or not, but I would hope to compete for as many of them as I can. You know, I just want to take it one day at a time, 1 year at a time, and just kind of see what pops up. And I want to be involved in the Irish dance community in some way. It's impacted my life. I see the impact it has on other lives. I know that I have impacted dancers. And not to say that y'all need me, because you don't. But, you know, there's something of value that I feel like I can offer the Irish dance community. And right now, like, I know what that is. You know, I'm my own person. I have a brand. I have an identity. And I have ways of connecting with dancers through my school, but also through online platforms like Instagram, which is how I met you.
Yep.
So there's just so many things like that I could do. And I'd love to continue to be involved, but I don't know what that's going to look like.
See, I think that's beautiful. And I wish that some of my personality could be more like you and Annabelle, where I don't have to know what's coming 3 years down the line. Like, I think there's something really nice about just being able to like you said, take advantage of opportunities as they come, be open-minded to the changes that might be coming, mm-hmm. and just kind of go with the flow a little bit more.
Yeah, I'm really curious to see the direction that CLRG takes. Is, I mean, it's really sad that a lot of these founding members of different regions or the IDTANA, like in CLRG, obviously, like as those people are unfortunately passing, you know, that's really sad because they were integral in making Irish dance what it is now. But I'm really curious to see how some of these new faces and this next generation and next two generations of teachers coming in are going to impact what it's going to look like down the line.
Yeah. I mean, and like we kind of touched on before, and I guess this kind of loops back around to, you know, you feel that your experience in the Mid-Atlantic region is one of a lot of support, and then they're starting to innovate in a lot of ways with the mock worlds, for example, and I don't think we've actually come back to it. So
oh, that's right.
What were your thoughts on the mock worlds? To me, when I first saw it, I was kind of like, okay, well, it's sort of like a 2-day fesh, but I see what they're going for. So as one of the people that attended, you went, you did it. Tell us all about it.
Yeah. So I heard about it right after Aractus or whenever it was that they announced it. It's an opportunity that they wanted to give their world qualifiers to prepare them for the 2-day format at Worlds. And that was pretty much all it was designed to be. And it's unfortunate in a lot of ways that it was in the middle of January because
it's just
no
a weird
one
time.
Was in shape. Yeah, I mean, like, I was certainly out of shape, but, like, so was everybody else. Maybe those doing All Irelands or something were, but for the most part, it was just kind of a rough time. But it did give people the idea of what it was going to be like to dance the world's dances as they would if they got through all of those rounds. So we had 2 rounds the first day and 3 rounds the second day. There were no age groups. It was just your grouped into split A or split B based on if you were a real hornpipe or jig and jig. And just went through 2 at a time and did your rounds. We had 3 adjudicators per round. And I think one of them was the same for the rounds that you did that day and the other 2 rotated each round, if that makes sense. So I think I ended up having like 12 different adjudicators or something.
And no scores, just comments.
Correct. No scores, just comments. So it was great because then I got like 12 different opportunities for feedback on my dancing. And although it was kind of a bummer that I was not in my peak shape or even close to being in peak performance, like they still found things that were like, oh yeah, I should work on this. Or just, you know, they were actually supposed to be giving me comments. Whereas if you go to a FESH, you're maybe not going to get a comment from a
right.
judge.
Right. You may or may not.
Yeah. So it was nice for them to be specifically looking for practical things that you can work on. And because it was all world qualifiers too, like they were just looking at it with a little bit of a different eye, I think, than if it was just a local competition. You know, like they know the standard. They're wanting to help our region do well at Worlds. And that's what it was. It was just an opportunity for our dancers in the region to be prepared for the format and get some additional feedback heading in to the preparation. So,
yeah. And for listeners that are a little maybe confused or don't know, the Worlds is changing their format. Mm-hmm. Now dancers will compete 2 rounds, soft and hard, on the first day. And then if you make the cut, they're going to make a cut similar to a recall, but you're going to dance.
50%.
Yeah, you're not going to go straight to your set dance. You're going to dance your hard and your soft again
right.
before the more traditional recall cut before mm-hmm. the set dance. So I assume you've done a double fesh weekend before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what were some of the differences, and taking into account that it's January and you were not in peak shape, like, did you feel that it was physically or mentally any different?
Mentally, it was really nice because there was like no pressure at all. And I gave myself the free pass because, like, I know I'm out of shape, whatever. This isn't a real fesh, whatever. But at the same time, I still feel like I danced really well considering my shape. And that was something that I didn't expect to get out of the weekend at all because it made me realize how much mindset is important. Like I've known that, you know, I've been told that for so many years, and I've worked on my mindset and my mental strength as I've gone into competitions. But this was just a total, like, every time I've done my dances on a stage, it's been at a fesh. And this was a fesh, but it wasn't a fesh. And so it really helped me understand that I should have a much more relaxed mindset going into a major, especially a major, but just at a competition in general. Like, I don't need to be super uptight. Like, I wasn't like constantly in the ballroom, like checking to see if I was going to miss my dances or anything like that. And so just kind of a side note, like, that was really valuable for me, especially as someone who's been dancing for a long time and has just never really had that opportunity. Because performances are totally different, you know, doing a performance is totally different than doing your competition steps. And so that was really cool to notice, like, okay, I guess I really do still need to work on my mental game, and practical things that I can do to help make worlds a little bit less, I don't know, uptight, I guess. So from that standpoint, it was completely different from a double fesh day because my mindset was just different. And I don't think it was a whole lot different physically. It was nice to not do three rounds and have it be like an all day affair. Cause you pretty much,
right. You had could just leave so since there were no awards or anything.
Exactly. So from that standpoint too, it was like kind of just less taxing. But I guess Worlds is kind of going to be like that too. You know, there's going to be the callback, like there's going to be the recall list, but you don't have to stay super late for awards or have it be some all day thing. And it did start really early in the morning. Like they started checking at 7:15 and like,
right. Like to simulate if you were up first or if you, right. You know, make it as Worlds condition
close to the world. Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, it was definitely hard physically. And I think that I did decrease in my performance on the second day, but not nearly as much as I thought I would. And I think that really comes down to the mindset about it, which is why I think it was a really cool opportunity.
Yeah, no, I was curious for one, just to see if there were anything that you, if there was anything that you learned, and two, in case there was something that would be helpful for people that maybe couldn't go or they're in a different region really far away and how they can maybe prepare for the 2-day format. So
yeah. I don't think there's anything to really be scared of because like everybody is going to be in the same boat. I think most people at this point have done double fesh weekends. And I mean, not everybody, but most people probably have, especially if you're going to the world championships. And so, you know, it's not that different than doing it back to back. But it still obviously is different than our expectation of any major ever. Like this is, no one's ever had experience of any single competition doing a 2-day thing. So it's going to be a shift, but we're all in the same boat.
Yep.
We're all going to have decreased performance on the second day.
What's your favorite recovery tip, like muscle recovery?
Foam rolling probably is my number one. I don't do it nearly as much as I should, but it is painfully wonderful. And unfortunately in a major, I can't really do the Epsom salt baths.
Because you have to be able to perform on day two.
Well, yeah, that too. But mostly just because of the tan, to be honest. it'll ruin that. But yeah, I mean, foam rolling is something that you can do pretty much all the time. And it's especially beneficial for recovery, but it can also be something that's done before you compete, at least to kind of help break you up a little bit. And so that's definitely been something that I've been doing for several years now as I've done multiple 2-day fresh weekends. That's something that really helps. And then also just like being able to rest well. You know, if you need a massage from your significant other or your teacher or somebody, you know, like try to make that happen. Try to make sure you're well rested and you're not just eating junky food, because I think everybody who's ever stayed in a fesh hotel knows like it's really hard to actually eat well. But the food that you consume the day before and leading up to when you're dancing, like that can really affect you. It can be heavy. I learned the hard way not to eat a lot of cheese. Competitions, dead serious. I had some serious issues with that.
Yeah, my approach was always to try and keep my food as similar as possible. So whether that meant I was bringing a lot of food with me or
right.
that just always helped me.
Yeah, it's hard, especially if you're traveling like way out of town. Like you can't always just bring a ton of snacks with you.
Right.
So I think people from the Southern and Mid-Atlantic and Mid-America regions are going to have an advantage traveling to Greensboro this year compared to people who are coming from the farther regions and overseas in terms of the diet. But I mean, there are ways to make that happen. Like you can go to the grocery store or whatever. So yeah, those are my tips. Foam rolling and then making sure you're still eating well.
Cool. So I think there are definitely more podcast episodes with you in the future.
I would love that.
And do you have any final advice just for dancers that are listening to this that we haven't already covered?
I think I'll just sum up by saying this, like you do you. I've done me for a long time, but I've really grown into the dancer and the person that I am. And that in and of itself has determined my trajectory in dancing. My experience as a dancer is like, it's so formative to my personality and the way that I approach life in general. And it is for everybody as well, as much as you want to make it. But like, you need to have an identity and you need to find confidence within yourself and who you are. So if you're struggling with that, if you're struggling with like knowing who you are as a dancer, or maybe not even being able to recognize what your strengths are, or maybe you just don't feel confident on stage, and maybe it's because of your costume or your wig, honestly, have a conversation with your teacher, have a conversation with a parent or another dancer that you can trust. I think everybody struggles in their own way with self-confidence, but that can really make or break you in training and once you get on stage to perform. So own it as much as you possibly can. Own the stage, like figure out what you have to do to perform well on stage. And the confidence for me, most of it comes from knowing that I have the look that I do and the style that I do. But that's something that's taken a long time to really get to. So that's really just kind of what I want to say. Like, everybody's an individual, and I wish that there is a little bit more individuality in Irish dance. So I'd hope that I can help other people find that in themselves.
I love that. And I think that's a really, really important message. And I hope everyone's listening to you.
Oh, thanks.
So
everyone is listening to us.
I think that's going to do it for today. Thank you so much for sharing all this wonderful wisdom and indulging everyone's curiosities.
Yeah. Thank you so much for having me. I have been waiting since like December to be on your show. So I'm super excited.
She's been really excited. So
very cool. All right.
Thank you. And then, all right, let's see. I'm going to. Okay. That officially wraps it up now. I'm so sorry for that rough edit on the end. I'm clearly hashtag technically challenged. So that's going to do it for today. Go ahead and make sure you subscribe to my email list so that you will get to be part of our giveaway in celebration of 1,000 listens. Thank you guys so much for your support, and thank you so much for listening to the show. See you next week.